Hey, you found Music Heads presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks for dropping in. This is a weekly roundtable discussion where a couple of colleagues and I gather around and have a little fun discussing some of the new music we're playing on the station and to find out if it's working for us. I'm the host of the show. My name's Bill DeVille. We'll be talking tunes today with our evening host. Mark Weed is back in the house.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And weekender Mac Wilson here as well. Mac,
I do overnights, too.
That's
right.
Don't
you? Uh-huh. Well, it's nice to have you all aboard. So let's dive in. Nas is a skilled MC and lyricist who's been at the front of the New York hip-hop scene for more than 15 years. He has returned with a new album, simply untitled. The album was originally going to be called The N-Word. Protests came from the likes of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. Eventually, Nas changed his tune and the album became untitled. This album is possibly the most powerful political statement since the heyday of Public Enemy, or at least Neil Young's Living with War album. Don't ever accuse this fellow of dialing it in. This is a man with something on his mind, and Nas is not afraid of taking on the big issues like racism and politics. It's like a documentary about what it's like to be an African-American in 2008, produced by an astute observer named Nas. Here's a track titled Hero. Another chapter, the cleanest rapper, distinguished gentleman, crooks a castle on his back, made backer. Exotic lady, eye catcher, holla at ya. Call me the chiropractor, working like Muay Thai class, get pressed spire out ya. And of course, I've been the boss's back when, rocking D-Boy, Fila Valor in a 190 black Benz. Now they shut down the stores and I'm shopping. Used to be train robbing, face covered in stock, and I'm down. Chain gleaming, switching lanes, two seat and hate him or love him for the same reason. Nas and the new album, Simply Untitled. Mark, is this working for you?
Yeah, I can't claim to be the biggest expert on hip-hop. In actual fact, I don't get a chance to listen to much more than what we play on the station, to be perfectly honest. And so to put it into a historical context of whether it stands up as a great hip-hop record at this point in history is beyond me. And of course, claiming to understand where he's coming from as a black artist in 2008 is totally beyond me, too. It's a different background to me, and I feel that I can't even pretend to understand where he's coming from. But I think it's very interesting that I come from a totally different background and find myself having very, very similar feelings to Nas 80% of the time, and that's why this album is working for me. Songcraft, I think it's as good as hip-hop gets right now in terms of dealing, like you say, with the big issues. Production-wise, it's not doing anything new, but I think the production kind of just builds a platform in that with Nas, and it's all about what he's saying, and I think he does that really well in terms of keeping the bells and whistles out of the way and having you focus on what he's saying. And like you said, that's the most important thing about this album.
Yeah, if it's reminiscent of anything, it is totally reminiscent of Public Enemy back in the day. And this guy, when he starts out in track number one, you know that he means business right out of the gate. He's not at a loss for words, and he's just freestyling over the top on the song Queens Get the Money. Ayo, Queens get the money, it's still screaming paper chasing. But presidential candidates is planning wars with other nations over stake with Masons. Pregnant teens give birth to intelligent gangsters, they daddy's faceless. Play this, by your stomach, let my words massage it and rub it. I'll be his daddy if there's nobody there to love it. Tell him his name, Nasir, tell him how he got here. Mama was just having fun with someone above her years. Niggas is still hating. Talking,
yeah, exactly. I like how he refers back to where he's come from, and in the body of the album, even if you don't know any of his backstory, you could literally, as I did, sit down and listen to this as a one-time story and see where he's come from, what's affected him, and where he's at right now. And that's what makes this engrossing and a pretty necessary album. Hip-hop artists in general, I think, kind of have a lot to bear on their shoulders sometimes because their art is seen as being the way that this generation documents history for us. And that's kind of a lot more pressure than some of our indie music artists, conventional rock artists have on their shoulders when they write an album. So I think, again, it's brave to make an album like this. And it seems facile for me to then say, well, you know, I was forced to. There's a couple of tracks on here I would have left off. It is 15 tracks long, and again, I like things to be a little tighter.
Yes,
and
tight, 10-12 songs, 40
minutes.
Yeah,
I think maybe the Project Roach, because of the kind of the analogy thing, didn't quite work for me at the end there, and We're Not Alone because of the R&B, which I've chorus singing-wise, I've never been a huge fan of that style, but that would be picking holes in it, and it seems unnecessary to do.
Mac, is this album working for you?
Well, I'm going to approach this from a different aspect. You said about in the beginning, you were talking about the original title of the album, and that, it's stuck in my mind this whole time because I feel that that's just, it's not necessarily a shadow over the whole production, but you cannot get it out of your mind. He says, well, the album's called Untitled, but you know what it's really called. There's a lyric on Hero. He goes, no matter what the CD called, I'm unbeatable, y'all. He makes a reference in Hero to how the Billboard charts are what dictates what he can actually do and how nobody has kept down Billy Joel or Bruce Springsteen or Bob Dylan in the past, but he needs to compromise his own vision, at least in regard to the title. He's made an album in very blunt and cutting terms all the way through, so it's a little bit, I'm a little bit frustrated that it seems that we can only discuss it at a distance, giving a very, you know, kind of a milquetoast appraisal of the whole album. I don't feel that we can really jump into it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's intended to make people a little uncomfortable, but these are all issues that need to be addressed, and he's doing it in his own way. He seems like a guy who wants the ball, who wants to shoot. I mean, he wants to be the guy with the ball and deliver the goods here.
I agree. He doesn't let up over the course of the album. It is fascinating, but like Mark said, it's tough to relate at times, too. So I can't claim to be an expert at the same time, yet at the same time, I can appreciate a lot of the ideas, too.
Some of the lyrics approach the whole debate, I think, in a very academic way. At one point, he brings up the idea that the debate about that word has gotten to the point where now some people are mad if they ain't one, is one of his lyrics. And he says, look how far we've come. How far is it possible to go? And I think that's a really strong message.
There's a lot of really strong messages in the album, it goes without saying. And, there's some actually pretty good music, too. And I really enjoy track number two, You Can't Stop Us Now, with that nifty sample of that old Temptations number, Message from a Black Man.
That is nice. That gets stuck in my head.
Yeah. David Starr on the chain of Sammy Davis. He helped pave the way for Southern crankers and them Harlem shakers. Now we getting our papers. They try to censor the words to stop our money coming, but you can't escape us, haters. If anything, this guy has too much going on this one. He's trying to express too much on this one tune. You can't really keep up with him. That's the thing that I noticed about this. It's really hard to keep up with this guy. He is so full of information. He's so well-read, and he's obviously reads the newspaper every day, and he's obviously living life, and it's just really hard to keep up with what he's got going on through the whole album.
It's almost like listening to a novel, reading the lyric sheet. You get twice as more out of it.
The other thing I have to say is the one thing I respect about him, after a couple of listens, I was like, but he's not necessarily coming up with any answers. And that's, on the balance of it, I think that's a good thing. He doesn't come across as, for one of a stereotype, too preachy. He doesn't say, I've got all the answers, listen to me. He brings up
He's throwing the issues out there and bringing up the questions. Good point.
But he says who does have the answers in the closing track.
The closing
Black
track,
President. I wonder who he's talking about there. Uses some sound bites from the Barack Obama campaign. A very topical song, all sorts of references in there from everybody from Jeremiah Wright to Calvin Coolidge.
And he has some great lines that I want to mention here, too. The new and improved JFK on the way, Barack Obama, and very optimistic closer. And yes, we can change the world is one of the lyrics from the song, too.
But another one is, are we ready for a black president? And I think that was a powerful thing to say now, too. Trying to be rich, still a pledge of allegiance. A predicate felon, a ghetto leader. Lending my poetical genius to whoever may need it. I bleed this for Queensbridge. Now living with my feet up, never defeated. So a president's needed. You know these colored folks and Negroes hate to see one of their own succeeding. America surprised us. A little black man got us. As long as things have been sick, we ain't ready to have a black president.
You're listening to Music Heads from Minnesota Public Radio. King Khan and the Shrines are a Berlin-based 12-piece garage rock meets psychedelic soul band. The latest incarnation of the band features 60-year-old Chicagoan Ron Streeter. He's played with people like Curtis Mayfield and Stevie Wonder, and a horn section including Ben Ross, Germany's answer to John Coltrane, and French rockabilly saxophonist Big Fred Rollercoaster. And last but not least is the over-the-top frontman King Khan, whose screaming and wailing recalls Wilson the Wicked Pickett. King Khan and the Shrines are best known for their raucous stage show, which was one of the highlights at this year's Pitchfork Music Festival. He is usually scantily clad, and the stage show usually features a cheerleader. The new album, The Supreme Genius of King Khan and the Shrines, is the perfect album for those wild dog days of summer dance parties. Here's a track called Land of the Freak. The album is called The Supreme Genius of King Khan and the Shrines. Mac Wilson, is this working for you?
Well, you and your garage rock. Baby.
I love the garage rock. It's summertime, baby.
Well, we have a pool going. How long it'll be before you mention Rocky Erickson or the Nuggets box set. So I guess I just won right there. This record, it's I wouldn't say that it's spotty all the way through, but it goes through interesting pacing things, and that's because it's compilation. It's a collected stuff from the history of King Khan and the Shrines from nearly the last decade. So that's a little bit distracting. I mean, you're listening to a non-chronologically ordered thing, but it starts off really well with Torture. We've been playing that one quite a bit. Probably my favorite track is track number 3, How Can I Keep You Out of Harm's Way? Just love the horn part on that one, too.
There's some great horns all over the
album. There's a great pop melody at the center of that one, and the horns are great.
Mark Weed, is this working for you?
Yeah, Mac picked up on pretty much every one of my key issues. The horns are what turn it for me, too. It's got a great, as you say, kind of garage rockabilly guitar sound, which kind of harks back to that big summer hits cruising around in the convertible. But it's the horns that really do it. And before I go any further, you got to check these guys out visually one way or another. On their MySpace, they have some wonderful video footage of them performing live, and there's jeweled headdresses and necklaces seemingly made out of shark's teeth around every one of the musicians. There's like 9 playing, and big pom-poms and huge afros, crazy sunglasses everywhere, and then this one guy who's playing the saxophone that looks like he should be in Kraftwerk. He's like got the angular haircut, and he's very stiff and straight. So it was a great dichotomy going on there.
That's Ben Ra.
That's Ben Ra, right. And the Freddie Mercury mustache on trumpet, which is just hilarious. And Bombarella, the go-go queen of the underworld. So it's a very visual thing. And again, like you said, they've gotten some rave reviews for their live performances. And I think that's how they should be enjoyed at their best. And like Max says, this album is not really an album. It was put together as a compilation. For me, they could have made 2 compilations out of this thing.
Yeah, they could have.
There's not many weak tracks towards the end. Tell Me is a little bit weak for me, and the one following that as well. But again, really solid all the way through, as a greatest hits, essentially, is what it is, should be. But because of its high energy, you really can't sit down and take it all in at
exactly.
One sitting. I've found
exactly.
Myself kind of cutting it at 4 or 5 because you just get out of breath because the whole thing's a party.
Well, I tell you what, though, there is a little break at track number 5, Fool Like Me, as King Khan does a little bit of testifying on that power ballad. And the fella can sing, too.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, they call it Psychedelic Soul Big Band, which is one of the best new genre names that I've seen in a long time. And you've picked up another thing. His voice is what totally wins me over, too, because you couldn't pull this off without a voice. And it's not just Wilson Pickett. It's not just James Brown. It's not just Mick Jagger, but he's got all of them and more kind of rolled in together in his own unique style. He kind of plays to his strengths with some of the just guttural sounds he makes.
Yeah.
And you can totally tell that he's got his soul into it. I mean, it's almost like his whole body is delivering the vocal.
You know, and he also reminds me just a little bit of a couple of local acts. Chuglin?
Yes.
That's... Yeah, with the big horns and revved up music and the mofos for that matter, too.
And stuff that doesn't necessarily translate really well to record from a live act. It's a little bit harsh for my ears, but...
Yeah, and I like that they didn't overdo the recording. It is kind of scratchy and raw. I guess that's the whole idea of the sounds, though. So, yeah, ultimately, I think this is a fun summer album.
And nothing more. That's basically the way that I see it. It is a fun summer album, but I don't see myself listening to this in anything outside of a fun context on my own at all.
Well, if you're thinking you already missed the point, Nobody can break his disguise. You're listening to Music Heads from 89.3, the current part of Minnesota Public Radio. Coldplay met at the University College of London and formed back in 1997. Coldplay dropped one of the new millennium's first great songs, Yellow, back in 2000. Chris Martin and his mates have been rock megastars ever since. Who doesn't know the name of Chris Martin's first child? Coldplay is now up to album number 4. It's called Viva La Vida. Marcus Dravs and Brian Eno were enlisted to produce. Coldplay took a little break from recording and toured Latin America in 2007. Those shows became a huge influence on the album. The group did some recording in churches and other areas in Latin America and Spain during that tour. The group then spent the rest of 07 recording music with legendary Brian Eno. Viva La Vida has been selling like hotcakes. It's one of the fastest selling records in UK history. And by the end of June, it had set a new record for the most downloaded album ever. Here's a little taste of the title tune, Viva La Vida. Coldplay's new album is called Viva La Vida. Mark Wheat, is this working for you?
It's unbelievable. You did a great job saying that again, Bill, and it's unbelievable that we're talking about an album that's sold that many. You know, it's not often that I checked this morning, and it's number 3 on iTunes behind the Jonas Brothers and the Mamma Mia soundtrack. Which is perfect.
It puts either one of those, by the way?
No.
How about you, Matt?
But I should, I guess. No, it puts it into perfect context because we like to think on this show, especially, you know, being music heads, that we don't have to pay attention to an album that sells this. An album that sells this many doesn't need our help getting any attention. But it's an interesting intellectual exercise to sit down and listen to the whole thing. First of all, I want to say I am a huge, huge, huge fan of Brian Eno. I've often answered the question, if you weren't yourself, Mark, who would you want to be?
It's Brian Eno.
Definitely be Brian Eno. So the fact that he's
back in the days of Roxy Music? Or
his whole life, dude. Roxy Music would have been enough. And then he invents ambient music. I mean, come on. And now he's basically produced, you know, the biggest selling artists of our time.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know...
YouTube. And all that.
Absolutely. And so I think that legitimizes his standing, if you like, his reputation. And that's a wonderful feeling. And I think he did a good job with Coldplay because he's all about instruments. After sitting down and listening to the whole thing, the only problem I have with Coldplay is Chris Martin. And
well, he's the band, though, Martin.
Well, then maybe I have a big problem with him. Because he's never sold me.
You didn't like Yellow?
And that... I like it as a hit single. I have to say, here and now, I'll confess, I've never listened to a whole Coldplay album from start to finish ever before because I didn't think I needed to because he's never sold me on one lyric that he's delivered. It always sounds pretentious when I try and say it, but I react to someone who doesn't sell me. I say it's a soul thing, and when he's selling this many records, there's a part of me that has to believe, I've got to pay attention to this because... somehow, some people are responding to him, but I never have. He never has sold me on any of the lyrics. The lyrics are weak in the first place, but if he delivered them properly, I think they would have more passion. So I guess that's my main stumbling block, and if you say he's the band, which I can't believe because,
instrumentally... Well, he's got a great band, I agree.
Yeah,
with,
instrumentally, they're very strong throughout this whole thing.
How about you, Mac? What are you thinking over there? Is it working for you?
Well, I've been following Coldplay from the beginning. I have listened to all of their albums, Mark. And one of the things that draws me in, I almost like them in spite of Chris Martin. That's one of those things. If you're going to be, I don't know if I'd consider myself a Coldplay fan so much anymore, but if you're going to get into them, it is almost in spite of Chris Martin. If you listen to the last album, X and Y, the band is on top of its game, but his lyrics, no. What draws me to the band is that I think they just write good songs. There's a lot of really, really good melodies at the core of this album, especially with Eno there. This album goes down very, very easy, and all of their stuff, it goes down very, very easy. If you kind of put Chris Martin to the back of your mind, it's even better, and you can just listen to it almost as, I don't want to say background music, but there's nothing offensive musically-wise about this whole album, and they do a lot of different things.
You know, I think these guys are just ultimately rock nerds. They're not that cool of guys. I mean, maybe it's as simple as that, but I really have no issues with Chris Martin or anything like that, but I don't understand on this album, and a couple different times, they have these songs that have two and three parts to them. Like they're three songs in one, and I just don't quite get that. Their songs seem unfocused, and they kind of meander, and for a band that's essentially making pop music, it loses me just a little bit.
Well, I think that's a little disingenuous. They set out that they were going to make a really, really short album with 9 songs. So this album has 10 songs, but 3 of them have hidden tracks on the end. So
yeah, I don't quite understand that. I'm thinking of Lovers in Japan, Reign of Love. That's number 5, is it? It's like 2 songs, but it's only listed as 1 track. I'm a little lost.
And it's U2 as well. If it wasn't for the voice, that would be a U2 track 5 that you just picked out. I don't understand why they do that when they know that they get compared to U2 all the time anyway. So,
but the fact that they dress up in different uniforms for each album and invent color schemes
They didn't even look that cool on the front cover of Rolling Stone wearing those Buccaneer outfits or whatever.
Right. On Spin magazine, and he gave one of the worst interviews I have ever read a rock star give. It was just so insipid, it was beyond me. The only thing I have to say about the length is it's 47 minutes. That's perfect.
I thought that would be a little long in your mind.
No,
I
that's perfect.
Like
I think Eno's.
42.
No, Eno's onto this whole 45 minute. I got this 45 minute theory that's the right length, and I think Eno's onto it. But then, coming to the decision of making a short, concise album, the last track, Death and All His Friends, it's almost like they wrote it to be the last track. It's all about the end, and it's like falsely trying to make it a concept album, like having a bookend at the end. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we lie awake dreaming of our escape. That's almost, he like sets that up on a pedestal as though this is the best I can do. Thanks for listening. It's just
I even go with you guys. I mean, there's absolutely nothing that I can say. Okay, I'll admit it. I just kind of like this album. I like Rush of Blood to the Head. I like Parachutes quite a bit. I like bits of X and Y, and I like this quite a bit, too. It's well sequenced. I can't pick out any bad tracks on here. I think a lot of it, if you want to say it's a return to form for them, it is, because they're totally out of their box with Brian Eno on board. I enjoy it.
It's good. That kind of sums up what the reviews that I've read of is everyone's like, well, wow. This is as good as they could get, because everyone's like expecting them to fail, which is an interesting...
Are you going to call me insipid now, or what?
No. And maybe Pitchfork were right. You know, that could happen once in a while.
No, not those words.
They said there's a thin line between lyrics that speak to everyone and lyrics that suck up to everyone. And I think a band has to walk that line, and I kind of respect them for trying to do that. And more often than not, they succeed. Like you say, I think they create a good background soundtrack to modern-day life. Someone has to be Coldplay.
All right, it's now time for the portion of the show where we invite you to get involved. We ask you to tell us your honest stories about music and its place in your life. We ask a different question every week. My guests and I will start it off and then invite you to join in with your story online. Today's question, what group or rock star should have retired already? Mac?
Well, I initially heard this question when you gave it to us as what artist should have stayed retired. So my specific answer is Big Star. They recorded they recorded their two classic albums in the '70s. They, for all intents and purposes, a band posthumous release, Third Sister Lovers. They become a cult favorite over 25 years or so. Then Alex Chilton gets together with the guys from the Posies.
The Big Posies.
Reforms Big Star with quotation marks. They put out an album in 2005. And just having that album there in their discography, it just kind of hurts.
It does hurt.
When you listen to the album, the first two songs are pretty good. Then by the time they're going into disco at the end, you're going, oh, God, this can't be sullying the Big Star name. It just can't be. As cool as it seemed at the time before that album was going to come out, It's like, wow, great, it's another Big Star album, but now I wish that they had just remained the legend of those three albums back in the mid-70s and these influences on everybody else.
I have that live album, by the way. It's still sealed. I've never opened it. Mark, your answer.
Well, I have to say, for some of the same reasons as Mac, that I wish the Sex Pistols hadn't got back together. God save the Queen! The
fascist regime! Ah, good answer.
It seems like it's elevating them beyond their status to even say this, but it seems like if any band were a crystallization of their time and their place and should have kept the tradition of, you know, live fast, die young, burn out before, whatever that cliche is, it's the Sex Pistols, and they didn't allow themselves to do it.
The Sex Pistols, it doesn't hold up very well, does it?
I mean,
the ideals that they were supposed to have, you know...
Right. And I guess it makes me naive, and I've tried to understand John Lydon ever since I've read interview after interview with him trying to understand.
He's an annoying son of a gun, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a jerk.
And, you know, he ended up saying it's just for the money, and I understand if he really was destitute and the only way he could make money was to put the Pistols back together, then, you know, but that wasn't the case. Maybe they got, they didn't make ever as much money out of the Sex Pistols as they should have done because of legality. You know, his image must have been used way more than he's ever got paid for. So from that point of view, I can understand them just saying, you know, this is for the money, and if people are going to come and see us, let it be.
So I'm going to answer that question. So what rock star or group should have retired already? Guns N' Roses. I am so sick of hearing anything about Chinese Democracy, that album that was supposed to come out 10 years ago, and every month there's a new update. And yeah, Chinese Democracy will be out in another month. Well, it never happens, and it'll never, ever come out. And I'm sick of reading about their shows that are in an arena, and they're supposed to be on at roughly 9:30 or 10, and they go out at about 2 in the morning at some arena, you know. Think about the kids that would have gone to the shows. And the only thing cool about Guns N' Roses I have to come clean with is the fact that Tommy Stinson is on the payroll.
I was going to say, at least he's paying Tommy's bills. That's good. What I think is interesting is that Velvet Revolver, that has some of the guys, the original guys in the band, including Slash, are now auditioning for another vocalist.
Oh, that's right.
So I think Axl should just go and audition, and then he's got two bands going.
Yeah, that's
going.
Right. Weiland, did they throw him out or did he quit? And he went back to Temple Pilots. And
he did. He's playing gigs with them now. That's awesome.
Anyway, well, those are our answers. So what group or rock star should have retired already? Tell us your story online. Go to thecurrent.org, look for Music Heads, and then follow the links to join the discussion online. In this episode, we discuss Coldplay's new album, Viva La Vida, Nas' new effort, Untitled, and the supreme genius of King Khan and the Shrines. I'd like to thank Mark Wheat and Mac Wilson for joining me for Music Heads. Thanks, gents.
Thanks for having us.
It's a wrap. Thanks for checking it out. Subscribe to the podcast of the show by clicking on Music Heads when you go to thecurrent.org. The program is produced by Steve Seal. I want to thank Derek Stevens for sitting in today. Michael Wells is the podcast production coordinator, and Julia Schrenkler manages the show's online discussion, which we want you to be a part of. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads. Then follow the links to join the discussion. I'm Bill DeVille from 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Music Heads, is it working for you?